This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome everyone to Jikoji and your practice here on the cushion. Those of you who have come here for the first time, I just want to welcome you for sure, because I know it's really challenging the first time, but it does seem to get a little bit more comfortable as you adjust, and so please don't give up on this practice. It's very helpful, and we noticed how helpful it was this weekend when we were writing poetry. So we would have a cycle of going out in nature, taking in all the beauty around here. There's so many beautiful trails to visit and gardens, and then come back into the zendo and sit, and then write, and then share, and repeat that cycle over and over again. So that sitting practice gave us a chance to kind of allow things to brew in a new way, that maybe when we're in our head outside thinking about how we can best describe our experience, we can sit with it and just let it naturally be expressed instead of trying to control it, which is what, we can do. It's not unusual. So our experience is all over the walls. You could see as she came in. And I encourage you to read some of them. The haiku form has a bit of a challenge to it, because in your average writing or long descriptive words, but here in haiku you condense your experience into a very distilled form of 5, 7, 5. The three lines have only 5 syllables, then 7 syllables, then 5 syllables, 17 total. So really finding the right word is helping you to get more intimate with each other, with everything you experience, and try to make it as clear and direct and succinct as possible, and still be creative and have fun with it at the same time. So there's a lot to haiku.
So one of the common features that is always recommended in haiku, especially because it's a Japanese product, so to speak, is that there's this season word called kigo. I don't know what the Chinese pronunciation is, but
can you see the board?
It's ki. Ki and then go, meaning word. Shaky.
It's just the board that's shaky.
So anyway, as a season word, and it's interesting, and I think when Americans are writing haiku, it's easy for us to overlook a seasonal word, especially if we live in California, because seasons are not so obvious. And I noticed that in what we did this weekend, we didn't pay that much attention to the season in every time. Sometimes it was very clear that it was autumn or colored leaves, but we don't have such a strong sense of seasonal aspect in California. But we can expand a little bit in the sense that when writing a very short poem like this, that it's very helpful to give somehow a sense of context, the sort of spirit or environment in which this is happening. It sort of helps to ground it, and also enables the reader to make perhaps a deeper connection with the poem itself. So do you want to talk about this one?
You'll notice that there's a line underneath some of the, and this represents the syllable, so that, you know, you're counting. So that's what I do when I write a haiku. At first I don't think about syllables. I just try to get an idea, an image, and then I write it down. But then once I start to edit, I start to look at, how many syllables? And then if there's a kigo, and can you identify the kigo in here, this poem? Actually, it stops here. So there's your kigo, autumn. But it, in my whole, I'd like to be able to arrive at a kigo without it being so obvious, like just saying the season word. But for autumn, there often is the autumn evening as a kigo. So it just, it works. This is a very famous poem by Basho, who's a very famous poet, particularly haiku poet. And so in here, there's not only autumn evening as a kigo, but there's also lone and the withered bough kind of represents the cold and the starkness of, you know, as we're approaching the season. But like Jiro said, our seasons here aren't so definable like it is in Japan, or, you know, more higher up north or lower south. So, you know, they don't really work as well. On a withered bough, a lone autumn evening. There's not too many other words you can add. It's kind of like, whoo, it doesn't lend itself to saying more than that. And yet, if you try to, it would be a little bit difficult to replace a word. Each word is very, very important in this. That's why it's famous. That's why this poem has lasted over generations and centuries, because it stands very clearly. You get the idea, it's autumn, you get the idea that there's kind of loneliness. There's the crow, and y'all can see crows. And there's a spirit of, we're moving into the cold weather season. That's what I get is, we're trying to, we're alone now, things are drying up and things are changing, there's transition in the air. So there's a lot of feeling that can go in with it, even though there is no feeling expressed necessarily. How about in this poem, can you identify the kigo? It's called, the words are, sheltered from the rain, he asks the price of things he doesn't want. Is it clear where the kigo is there and kind of what that season might be?
Rain.
So when it's raining, it's often not spring. Well, it depends, though, what part of the world you're in. And it's probably not summer, so it's either a fall or a winter. And sheltered, we're not necessarily always looking to get into a shelter in the summer. You know, we want to go outside in the sunshine. So shelter also could be a kigo. So it gives us a sense of place. It's like getting a postcard from someone far away. There's a beautiful image on the postcard, or you can put a haiku on the back so that you don't have much to say. You just real quick, hey, wish you were here. The weather's warm. The beach is calling me. So you get a sense, I really want to go there with that person. I want to have the same experience that they're having. This is the idea of haiku, is that it draws you into the experience they're having, and it's like you're living it with them. You become very intimate with them. There's not a lot of ways that can happen in this world when we're texting and talking and Zooms. But getting really close to someone, really intimate, really safe and trusting with someone, we don't want to use a lot of words that distance us. Just the right word. The word that they can trust is real. It's like when you're sitting in your practice, you know, you're not going to try and fool yourself and go, oh, I'm not uncomfortable. Oh, I'm very uncomfortable. When's a break? You know, just say to yourself, that's okay. This is what's real. It's interesting to notice what's real.
One of the things we did during this weekend was that we just walked up to the ridge, walking the trail up to the ridge, also down to the pond. So any of you should think about doing that while you're here today. It's a nice hike up to the ridge, about 15, 20 minutes. So along the way, then we stopped, and here and there, and then we just happened to have these little notebooks, and so whatever, you know, we noticed the way the sunshine is hitting a leaf, or the moss on a log, and or some kind of sound of a crying bird or something, and we just note it down. So these different events, we just write down. We're not trying to write a poem right there, but we just note something that struck me as, you know, what would you say? Something that has meaning, something that, and that I respond to. So then, after we've taken that walk, and we might have a page or two of just items that we have noticed, then when we are, come back to the Zendo, and first we did some sitting, and then we just put our thoughts together and made some, tried to make some haiku poem with this structure of 17 syllables. But the interesting thing is that if you have this little notebook with you, you really notice things a little more intensely, because it's right available. The notebook is right there, and then you look a little more intensely than if you were hiking up in the normal way of hiking, maybe chatting with your friend or something. So walking with a kind of a haiku intention can sort of open you up a little bit more to what is actually here. And that is the intention, or part of the result anyway, of our meditation. When in meditation we just become more fully aware of the moment in which we are being. Now, what is in this moment? The richness of this moment, and that becomes more available to us than also when we are taking a hike, and we really appreciate what is all around. And then because we're thinking of doing a haiku, then there's a sense that this is something which we can also share with someone else, and we can't share it well unless we get the right words for it. So we really take some thought to express exactly this experience. Of course, it's very different from the experience itself, but there's this aspect of sharing in this experience as you are considering writing haiku. So it sort of broadens the intention.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what Drew's saying about having the intention, even in your, just your word choice, like, how can I be as brief? But you don't want to be so brief that it sounds kind of staccato. You said that staccato being like just choppy and unnatural sounding, but brief in that it captures something without anything extra, no flourishes, nothing added to it to make it fantastic or elaborate. Just really exactly what it is you want to say. And when you get there, you know it. You really know it. You're like, ah, I feel resolved. That's the word that Drew used is, okay, this sits well with me. It's kind of a nice phrase, sits well. The whole body feels it. You're on your cushion. You don't even notice your cushion after a while. It's sitting well with your body. So here are some ways that we expressed our poetry. Just took brown paper bags and cut them up. And then we will eventually, you saw them on the clothesline out in the foyer, but it's actually, we're going to put them in the trees. And eventually they just blow away, which is good, because you don't want to keep them there forever. You want to create more. So here's, Drew mentioned this too. He said, sometimes you try to capture the direct experience that you're having. It's so hard. There was this moment we're on the hill, on a bench way off by the pond. As soon as the sun was baking us, it's like, really bright, grasses everywhere, just, still and dry. And then this big misty fog bank rolls in, and it's just the sunlight and the air was so alive and moving, and it changed so rapidly. It could hardly, it just like that, it was over. And we wanted to, I don't think any of us actually caught it, but you want to. You want to share it. You want to tell, I want to tell you about it because it's so magical. But as this poem says, in my words, no, start over. If my words cover so well, will I ever see it again? If my words cover this so well, will I ever see it again? God, it's a dilemma, but I won't forget that moment. It's in me. And yet, sometimes we want to share it, and just the trying to share it just misses it. It's called divine frustration in my eyes. You want it to be shared, and yet you can't quite get there. So you do the best you can. You be as brief as you can, succinct. Try to be authentic in your choice of words. You want to read one?
Motors roaring. Heavy breathing. Crickets chirping. But all still quiet.
A long-term member of our practitioner here at Jokoji wrote this poem, and he has been here when there wasn't as much traffic on the road and many years ago, and now you hear a lot of motors now. They're louder. And I recall when he was writing this, because it was kind of loud all of a sudden, and he was so at peace. It just really, I could feel that. And I was, and I think we're all feeling quite at peace on the, on our hiking. But it was pretty loud. There was a rifle range shooting things over in the distance. There's motorcycles, there's chatters, hiking. And yet we were just so quiet in ourselves. And that's what the practice does. Like, it could be completely loud all around us. And then with a lot of practice, we learn how to be still, like the eye in the storm. Not disconnected, not like denying it. I mean, he's writing about it, but it's not inside of him. And that reminds me, when I was teaching the haiku and meditation in schools, I'd ask people, what do you, the kids, you know, I'd say, what would you define meditation? How would you, what words would you use to describe meditation after they've had their experience? And, you know, they'd say, what you might say, you know, it's concentration, it's tranquility, accepting what is. You know, I don't know if they said those things, I'm making that up, but this is what I remember one of them said. He said, well, I know that if I practice a lot, I could meditate while the teacher's lecturing and she won't catch me. Here's another brown paper haiku. Buddhas gather inside a shoebox. Nothing special. We hiked over to the Jiso garden down south of here, and there's a lot of little things to see there. So if you haven't explored there, it's really worthwhile. And there's a lot of history there about what all the things there, the garden and the flowers. And so it's worth exploring. Buddhas gather inside a shoebox. Nothing special.
Moss-covered stump juts at an angle. There's history here. Moss-covered stump juts at an angle. There's history here.
One thing, too, about haiku is trying to stay current, you know, right here in the moment, not like thinking about what's going to happen next month, next day. And what I kind of experienced a little bit in my working with poets in haiku is the temptation to let it remind you of something else. Like, there's history here. And what I notice is at the moment I'm looking at something that's inspirational, sometimes, that reminds me of that time when I was over with so-and-so in that place, and you can get on a train ride to somewhere else, and haiku can bring you right back here, which is helpful, because it's not going somewhere else, it's staying right here. So what happens then, and when someone reads a really good poem, you're right there with them, not going off in your vacation next month. It's you're right there with them. So that could be very helpful to keep you grounded in this experience that we're having together today in Zendo, not somewhere else. Because sometimes we could really want to be somewhere else. But once we drop into this presence here together, we find that, you know, it's so bad. We can get creative with each other. You can write poetry, even. So that's what we did. And it was really quite enjoyable to be with each other, collaborating with each other, creating with each other, seeing the world with each other, even in this little place that we're in. It's amazing how the leaf could take on so much meaning, because in ourself we have history, and we have history with leaves. And so we got a lot to do. We have a reservoir of let's say words to describe that leaf from our history, from our intelligence, from our creative resources that we have available, and from each other, because we are bouncing off ideas. You know, Curtis would have something and he'd come up with a way better word to describe it, or, you know, instead of using mist, we can use a few other words to say just the same thing, but it just gets us right closer to the moment. So it's fun. It's really fun. It's playful. And yeah, it's kind of serious too. You know, we're getting somewhere with this. And you can see we got a lot of poems And there's a lot more in our little notebooks that didn't get written. Because, you know, we're probably going to work on them some more at home. And one of the things that we brought to the workshop was exercise where I say a line, and then Jero will say a line, and then I'll say the third line, just like that, on the spot, just no thinking about it, just, you know, jump in and take a risk. And using that creative kind of spirit at first seemed a little daunting, like, well, I'm not going to be able to come up with something that makes sense, or, you know, we can notice ourselves be a little unsure of ourselves. But then as we got into it, it was kind of like, oh, it came easy. It was just like, oh. And I think that's born of trust in our own intuition. We're alive. We've been on the planet for a while. We're valid. We can say something that makes sense. It's okay. And then we just play with that. So I encourage you to play with it because it's fun. And find people to support that with you, that creativity. So.
And another aspect of the sort of poetic mind, you could say, which is similar to the meditative mind. Let's look at, in your chant books at page 21. This is a chant we so the great way isn't difficult for those who are unattached to their preferences. So when you're out walking and you like the branches rising from the tree. But then the fallen branches, you don't like them because they're dead. So that's a preference right there. And what we want to have is give our minds enough space so that we don't have to have a preference. So let go of longing and aversion, and everything will be perfectly clear. So when we're walking, if we're not constantly thinking about this and that, this is good and that's bad, or I like this and I don't like that. If we're much more open just to the experience of the tree as it is, or the grasses, or the discarded automobile by the road, or the dead snake, or whatever you come across, instead of immediately, you know, thinking hard in one strong way or another about how wonderful or how terrible it is. So when you cling to a hair's breadth of distinction, heaven and earth are set apart. It's just the tiniest natural either preference or aversion that we come up with, it really causes things to become separate from each other. So if you want to realize the truth, don't be for or against. So when we're being open to the reality of this moment-to-moment experience, if we receive it rather than sort of judge it and be willing to accept only the part that we like, then we have lost the totality, a sense of the totality of our experience. So the struggle between good and evil is the primal disease of the mind. That's just such a bald statement of our primary suffering that we carry on day after day after day. Not grasping the deeper meaning, you just trouble your mind's serenity. So being open to the deeper meaning, in other words, in a sense, being open to not knowing what this is, not having to define it or judge it. As vast as infinite space, it is perfect and lacks nothing. But because you select and reject, you can't perceive its true nature. So it's what is the true nature of this tree or this automobile speeding down the road? We can just be open to it, and then we can just let the experience itself happen and then pass away, and not have to classify it and put it in your cabinet as something good or something bad, or that I have to have, or I would never want to have that. So there's just a little more space in our minds for receiving and considering and allowing. So the Xingqing can be an inspiration for writing poetry.
It seems we wrote a lot of poetry, and it just goes to show you that we're probably always thinking about our experience. We're always perceiving, receiving, transmitting what information we've gathered. So it's always happening, it seems like. And then we notice that we have a lot to say. When we write it down, we go, all that's been rolling around. And yet, when we take a moment to have the intention to be clear about our experience, and clear being, not going into what this is like. No, this. What is it? What is it? We may not know. We may not have any words to describe what we're experiencing. And yet, there's something that we can come up with. There's some image to say the tree falling down, the grass standing up. That those things conjure something up in us. And I can't tell you what, we don't know, but we do feel something. And so you don't have to know. That's what's the beauty of haiku. You don't have to. There's no pressure to know exactly what the meaning is. It's just you get a sense for it. Just like the withered bough, you get a sense for something withered, old, and yet it's autumn evening. You get a sense, we're in transition. It's transitioning. And we will cycle back again to a green, very vibrant tree. It's just, so you get this sense of things are always changing, moving, and yet, so we don't have to be, let's say, grasping for that which is leaving, nor do we, and so we can also honor it. It's leaving, but it'll probably come back around again, maybe in a different form, different kind of tree, different kind of flower. So this idea of honoring it, letting it go, but kind of trusting things come back around too, like really being just grateful. There's this Suzuki Roshi had said something about a very well-honored Zen master who took to smoking a cigarette, and he went and lifted up the cigarette and lit the cigarette, inhaled and exhaled, and there's just a sense of, oh, this feels so good. So I better quit. Because he honored it. He said, this is probably as good as it's ever going to get. I better just know this experience and honor it and let it go. Things are always passing and going, and it's kind of sad too, but okay, let it go. Probably we'll come back around some other way, some other day. We don't know. We don't know. Well, I think it's time to do a little haiku. So I'll come up with a line, and you come up with a line. Come on, it's possible. And then I'll come up with a line. And then Jiro will do the same. So I'll start the line. It's kind of good to have a first liner, you know, because then you can kind of feed off that. So thank you for playing with me. Longing for little. Longing for little. Remember, we're looking for seven syllables.
Hiking up the long trail.
Banana slug passes us by. Could you repeat the whole thing?
Longing for little, hiking up the long trail, banana slug passes us by.
True.
Buddha sitting there behind us.
Can you see it again?
Buddha sitting there behind us.
Surprise, it's the mirror.
Time to wash it.
Basho, the great haiku poet, he says, if you really want to write poetry, get together with people who like to write poetry. Makes sense. If you really want to learn to practice Zazen, get together often with people who like to do Zazen. And so I encourage you, if there's something you really like to do, find other people to do it with that enjoy it like you do. Because it just makes it fun to collaborate. And, you know, we can get a little bit like, you know, on our cushion too much sometimes, and it's like, no, we need to be with people. It's normal to like to be together and be liked.
We'll take some questions or comments.
Okay. If there's anything that you would like to participate with and draw your attention to and draw our attention to, please feel free to. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your talk and sharing the joys of haiku. It's really good for me to learn from you both. Can you explain what a kigo is once more? And how do you spell kigo? I've never heard the term before, so I just don't.
K-I-G-O.
Okay.
So, how do you say it in Chinese?
Jiyu.
So it's the English translation is just season word, a word for the season. And when you study haiku in any traditional way, that you always come across a list of them. What happened to my list? I had a list. Anyway, there's usually a list for each season of 20 or 30 words, and it can be anything from animals to plants to the names of the season, and so on.
Even architecture, and plants and insects.
So it's kind of arbitrary because, for instance, moon is the kigo for autumn, but we have the moon all year round, so it doesn't have to be only autumn, but the moon is especially prominent and somehow intense in autumn, so that's why it's considered a kigo for autumn. And then like crickets are either late summer or autumn in general. But it's more difficult in California with the seasons. So we hardly notice them like in colder climates.
Jackie.
Hi, I'm Kaya. I'm new to haiku. Could you say a few words? I've been counting the syllables, and I keep getting six on the first one. So, is each line first five, then seven, is that?
Five, seven, and five.
You don't need to be particularly on it all the time. You don't lose the meaning or the syllable count, but generally it's 5, 7, 5. And, people are more fluid with it. You can put, 8 or 9 on the second line and just 3 on the first line. 17 is the goal. And yet, it's flexible. Maybe if you're trying to do a contest in haiku, you want to stick real clearly to 17 syllables and 5, 7, 5. But, the more important thing is, does it feel natural to you? And are you expressing what you need to say clearly?
One idea also is that that's one breath of speech can be 17 syllables. Mm-hmm. So it's basically one breath.
Mm-hmm. Jackie had something to say.
Oh, that's what you're saying. Okay, online.
Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I don't experience California seasons to be indistinct or not very distinct one from the other, because I work in nature a lot, and you just go, this is not that kind of climate that I grew up with in Scotland, but it has all of its own changes. And I wrote a little haiku. Do you want, I put it in the share. Shall I say it?
Please read it, yes.
Plants dry and seeds pop. Birds forage in dusty soil. Sudden splash of rain.
Good. Again, please.
Okay, this is my haiku for California autumn, right? I'm trying to be seasonal here. Plants dry and seeds pop. Birds forage in dusty soil. Sudden splash of rain.
Good.
You did well on not having many seasonal references. You found some to work with. Even, the splash. Thank you. And then,
I wonder if you could share a little bit about the origins of haiku.
Well, Basho seems to be the one who really got the party started. He really worked with haiku, wrote thousands of haiku. And one of the interesting things about Basho is that he walked a lot. He took journeys a lot, and people. He wasn't trying to be famous, I don't think, you know. But he became famous, and he would go places, and people would feed him. They would want him to be there, and he would go long distances. In fact, you know, long like what he traveled on his journeys like miles and miles on foot, 1,000 miles in a month or something like that. So he had long journeys, and he did travelogues. His poetry was like the red leaf flutters in the autumn breeze, or you know, and that's it. That was his poem. And these things helped him know where he was, where he was going, and he can reflect on that later, like a picture. Like instead of having a photo album, he had his journal of all the haiku. And they weren't always haiku. There's lots of different forms around it. There's senryo and longer versions. But the main thing was hoku, the first line. So when you have a hoku, everything else kind of falls behind it, like all the different verses. The renge is the lots more verses that can follow. And people would want him to go traveling and give them a hoku, and then they would take it from there. And thousands of verses could follow that one line. They're all interrelated somehow, though. So he was the master who brought the hoku. And then hoku, and then there was something about how high the word haiku came from that, because it was, I'm not sure how that happened, but then haiku was formed from the first line being the hoku, and then the next two. So Basho, of inspiring a lot of other people through his work, and you know, if you read his poetry, it may not be that inspirational to you, but at that time, it wasn't so common, you know, someone write like this. But anyway, I think Jerome knows a little bit more that he might want to share. I'm hoping.
Yeah, it was the poetry before Basho's time was usually a longer poetry. And then but it was all organized according to syllables, and the haiku was the first poem of the series, so to speak, of that kind of one poem. And then there's also this renga, which are these linked poems, where there would be a whole bunch of people gathered together, and one after another, they would compose a poem, and the next person would respond to that poem, and then another person would respond to that poem, and so on and so on. And so it just grew into a very long string of poems. And and so in those renga, then that first poem was the haiku size. So it's part of a long poetic process.
But haiku is very fun to write with friends. And Jiro has traveled to Japan for long stretches, and he and I write back and forth. And it's not just all haiku, but it's poetry. And just back and forth. You know, he writes this one thing, I write another thing, and it's simple, but it's a way of communicating. At home, I write a lot of cards to friends and family, and I don't have much to say necessarily, but I want to connect. So, and then they live in different places, so I'll send a card and I'll put a haiku in it. That's it, just send it off. But you know, how nice to get something from anybody in the mail these days. Mm-hmm. So to see someone's handwriting, it's very uplifting. And it feels warm and connecting like nothing else, you know, like it's a good meal or something. So haiku can be very friendly and engaging with friends and family, and especially little kids. It's amazing to work with little kids and hear their haiku. They're so good at it because they don't have the tendency to edit themselves. like as we adult, we get a little bit more perfectionist, and they're not worried about that. They want to just play. So, you know, playing with kids around with haiku was my most treasured times, you know, with kids, because they do have such a great sense of what's happening. And they don't get too caught up about it. Hope that kind of gives you a little haiku background. So again, it's about the ordinary that we're looking at too. And sometimes you can get a little, I've been in poetry groups, you know, with regular, you know, classical poetry, and the style could get a little like, ooh, you know, I don't even know where we're going here. You know, it gets a little too much to take in if you're not real familiar, like Shakespeare you've heard of. It could be a little difficult to interpret and translate some of the words. But in haiku, it's very basic, ordinary, simple. And, you know, that's what kind of gets it so easily translatable.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.